I used to just go with whatever meat looked good or was on sale at the grocery store. But now that I've experienced the exceptional quality, flavor, and convenience that you can get from Omaha Steaks, I'm never going back. They can build a custom food plan based on your schedule, which means less food waste and stocking up on high-quality proteins to always have on hand. With Omaha Steaks in your freezer, you're always just minutes away from a quality dinner, whether it's Taco Tuesday or a weekend feast. Taste the Omaha Steaks difference and never settle for grocery proteins again. Get flavorful, high-quality proteins delivered by visiting omahasteaks.com, plus $35 off when you use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code YUM at checkout for $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
Deep in the heart of Appalachia, guys set out on a quest to create the greatest podcast.
Sorry, dude. I thought we agreed on the correct pronunciation of Appalachia.
No, dude. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over and over. It's pronounced Appalachia.
Listen, freaking angels and the women got together. That's how we got Bigfoot. That's how we got vampires. That's why we got all of this stuff.
These ancient Appalachian mountains that are literally older than bones. There's old entities here. When you start finding out more about them, they start finding out more about you.
Good Lord, sir. This goose has gone rabid. And you think you're just going to run up with your little sword on the king of the goose squad?
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable. They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers that they probably will never ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Hey there, hill folk. And welcome back to another episode of Appalachian Intelligence. We are extremely, extremely thankful that you guys could join us again here for another week, for another edition of AI. With you tonight, your hosts, Justin and Lance. Ryan's not with us at the moment because we're doing something extremely rare.
Bonus!
We're doing something extremely rare tonight. Me and Lance are actually in the same room, which hardly ever happens. You guys know usually we do everything remotely through Zoom. Lance lives about 45 minutes to an hour away from me. Ryan's all the way in South Carolina now. So, you know, we don't really have a middle point to set up and record in studio. But it's me and Lance with you tonight. We also have a couple guests with us here tonight because we'll just go ahead and throw it out there. I'm with a bunch of track coaches. My daughter runs track, and we're up here at the state championship meet in Harrisonburg, Virginia. The meet's going on at James Madison University. Some of y'all that live pretty close, that Shenandoah Valley area, you know the place is extremely popular for Bigfoot, for Sasquatch sightings. So we've been looking into a little bit of that stuff while we're here. The guys that we have with us here tonight, who we'll introduce in a minute, they got a couple cool stories, and we'll get into a little more of our relationship when we get there. But first...
But listen, not even are these two gentlemen here with us tonight connoisseurs of all things weird. They may have... They did, as a matter of fact, shape the young minds of Justin and I at a very young and impressionable age, and probably caused us to be a little bit strange like we are right now.
Bless their hearts. Bless their hearts.
They didn't know what they were getting into, but here they are.
Well, we'll go ahead and introduce them since we're already going down this road. With us tonight, we have our good friends, Mike Owens and Brent Deal. Fellas, go ahead and say hey to the hill folk.
Hey, guys. How are y'all tonight? This is Mike.
Hey, this is Brent. Glad to be here tonight.
And these two gentlemen, Brent actually taught and coached Justin and I many, many moons ago now. And Mike as well was one of our coaches and a mind shaper as well. Made us... Well, I'll go ahead and say it. Made us who we are
made
today.
Us the men that we are today. Shaped our youthful teenage brains.
We may be showing their age a little bit. Sorry about that, fellas.
You are very welcome. It was our pleasure.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll get into that. We'll read a. We'll do like we always do. We'll start off reading a 5-star review. This week's review comes from Tom NCO. That's Tom _ N _ I'm guessing Colorado. It says 5 stars. Interesting new fringe podcast. I was unsure what this was going to be when I first started listening. I was hopeful that this would not be the audio version of Grand Old Opry meets Hee Haw. I was not disappointed. Justin is by far one of the most professional and effective hosts of any interview-based podcast. Ryan and Lance add an excellent balance of skepticism and Christian viewpoints to what might otherwise be a one-sided discussion. AI addresses a wide variety of topics, and I find it refreshing that they are unafraid of voicing their opinions on anything, an increasing rarity in our modern society. If you don't stop to listen, you're really missing out. Don't be put off by the name. These boys are not your caricature holler folk. Insightful, thoughtful, and incisive commentary and observations abound. It's a really pleasant change from the rest of the pack.
That is way too kind. We're just a bunch of idiots talking about crazy stuff all the time. That is way, way, way too kind.
We are a bunch of idiots, but we do appreciate that review and all the eloquent speech throughout because, as you guys know, when people read that, they come our way. If I'm in a new place, like Harrisonburg, Virginia, and I want to go check out a restaurant, guess what? I'm going on Yelp. I'm going on Google. I'm looking at the reviews. I'm seeing what I like. And I pick it based on that. It's the same way with podcasts. So each of these that you guys do, it really, really, really helps us out a ton.
And as eloquently as that was dictated in that review, it will not be as eloquently dictated tonight over the next couple of minutes as we talk about some crazy stuff that's going on in these boys' lives tonight.
No, no, no. There's no eloquency on Lick Creek, y'all. It ain't happening. But no, getting back to our guests here tonight. Fellas, first off, I want to say congratulations to all three of you. Now, I'm including Lance in this. Lance and Mike and Brent all in this. They're track coaches. They've led their teams to awesome seasons. They have student athletes that are participating for state championships up here. And that's a huge accomplishment. So for that, fellas, that's really awesome. And I commend you for the jobs that you've done all season.
Hey, listen, there was an actual parent that appreciated what their coach was doing. That doesn't happen a lot, folks. It doesn't.
Well, I also really like you guys. I mean, that helps. But we're going to get into some stuff tonight. As I mentioned a minute ago, you know, we're here in Harrisonburg. It's the Shenandoah Valley region of Virginia. I looked up today. First off, fellas, I was checking out what's going on in the area as far as reports and sightings and all this and that. Well, James Madison has a Bigfoot club. It's really cool.
No way.
It started out, a couple friends were, you know, they would just watch these terrible, terrible Bigfoot movies, you know, once a week. Well, then they started talking about the conspiracies and different theories based on Bigfoot, and then different creatures came in and got involved. So they started this whole club. Now they're doing like a YouTube channel and all kinds of different stuff based on that. So that's really cool.
The more wood booger, the better.
The more wood booger, absolutely, the better. But just to throw a few key notes out there, Harrisonburg is located in Rockingham County. Rockingham County, according to the BFRO website, has the most reported sightings of any county in the state of Virginia. It's number one overall. And being in like Harrisonburg, you would think, well, how in the world would Bigfoot be right here in the middle of the city? But you get to some of these places and start looking around, there's a whole lot of woods around here. Absolutely. There's a whole lot of places to hide. And you get into a place that everybody's just kind of jam-packed in little bitty areas in a big old county. Well, what's going to happen as a place starts rising up and businesses start flourishing and traffic and interstates, they're going to sparse out and hide if they're around, right? So it's number one. Highway 33 through here, there's been quite a few crossings and people see one. Actually, Matt Moneymaker tweeted a few years ago about one of his friends that worked with BFRO. There's also a high knob here in Rockingham County, just like there is one in Wise County where, you know, we're at. But this guy that worked for BFRO, he claimed to have hit a Bigfoot on High Knob here in Rockingham County.
With his car?
With his car. There was hair, there was blood, and they found the hair and blood. It's reported. They sent it off to be tested. The testing comes back like it always does, inconclusive, exactly. But there was no body. So he don't think he killed it. But the same guy started investigating the area and found all kind of footprint, got casts, all this different stuff. So the evidence out there says that they're probably around. It'd be super awesome if we're right in the middle of running track tomorrow and one just jumps into 100. I mean,
well, that would be awesome.
That would be. I'll tell you, Justin, in a couple of weeks, the girls and my wife and I are headed on vacation. And one of the things that we're going to be doing during vacation is we're going to be taking the Skyline Drive, which is about 110 miles across the Shenandoah Valley. It's got all kinds of hiking trails, little waterfalls. It's pretty much a drive across the top of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And I know for a fact that if for some reason we're able to catch sight of a Bigfoot, your boy's going to run after it and try to tackle it. And I'll do my best to get video evidence of me trying to tackle the Bigfoot as well during the process.
You better go Instagram live. Like right then, Instagram live. I'm after a Bigfoot. I'm on his trail. It's got to be like that.
As a former coach of Lance, I know for a fact he can tackle that Bigfoot. There's no question about that.
That's high praise for this old fat boy.
Well, that would be the problem, is catching the Bigfoot. He can tackle him once he got there. But I don't know about the catching him part. All right, but let's dive on into this thing. We've got Brent here actually lives in a little place in Dickinson County, Virginia, where I live, called Lick Creek. It's where I grew up. Same places, and as you guys well know by this point, I experienced a whole lot of stuff on this little bitty creek in Dickinson County. Brent has a couple really interesting stories, and although they may not just punch you right in the face, it may not be a Class A sighting, it's weird enough to think, there's probably something to that. So Brent, the floor is yours. Tell a little bit about your experiences with what possibly could have been a Bigfoot.
Well, I will do that. But first, I would like to say about you guys that when I had you in World History 2, you guys were the right kind of kids. Well, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed having you guys in class. Thoughtful, intelligent, trustworthy. And I know it's hard to believe, but even better dads. I mean, I know you now. Man. And you're the right kind of guy still. Okay, so I'll say that.
We appreciate
it. And honestly, I wouldn't just tell these stories to anybody. You know what I'm saying? Because, and I've not really told it to just anybody. It's probably maybe Mike and my wife. And that's about it.
Yeah.
So, and my dad. So, I mean, like you say, they're not really in your face kind of stories. But there are stories that will stick with me for the rest of my life. The first, and I remember it very clearly. It was January of about 2021. It had snowed all morning. The snow was accumulating. It was on the road. And under normal circumstances, I just would have slept in. My son Braxton that day, however, had a basketball game. It was his first middle school game. And I'm like, hey, buddy, let's just set this one out, okay? But he didn't want to miss his first game, so went against my better judgment, and I said, all right, what we'll do is we'll get sleeping bags. We'll take toothbrushes, toothpaste, whatever we need. We'll make it to the school, and if it snows us in, we'll spend a couple of days there, and that's what we'll do. So the backstory is it was bad weather, cold, snowing, the road was covered, but here we are out on the road. So we make it to the game, And, you know, like most of those activities, we probably played about 4 or 5 hours that day. By the time we get ready to go home, the highway department had cleared enough of the road. And so I said, well, let's go on back home. I think we'll make it back home. But it was still very snowy and still very cold. We take our time and we go back home. But my little boy is so excited for his first middle school jersey. He says, Dad, let's stop by and let Papa see my jersey. Okay. So, well, let's do that. Now, my dad lives on Lick Creek and he lives in a very remote area. And so as we got out of the vehicle, we're excited. He's got his jersey on. He got into the game a little bit, that kind of thing. But there's an old logging type road. There's an old road that's behind my dad's house. So we got out of the vehicle and we're kind of laughing a little bit. And like boys will do, you know, it was still snowing. It was still cold. And we got out and we peed in the snow. Yeah. We're just laughing, you know, having a big time. So
we're absolutely
trying to write our name. We're laughing about that, having a good time.
So I write my name in lowercase. in your mother's handwriting, Rebecca.
But there you go. Right. So I mean, all those things are so clear to me, and we're loud, making a little bit of a noise, and then we laugh a little bit, and then all of a sudden we got quiet, and we hear three distinct wood knocks. Thump, thump, thump. And they're coming from an area where no one lives. It's probably a mile, half a mile somewhere. It's way up in the woods. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is that? Braxton looks at me and we're like, we're stunned. And I'm like, shh, listen. And in a few seconds, we hear again, thump, thump, thump. But this time it's a little way, it's in the same general direction, but it's a little ways off to the right. Same general direction, but not same location.
Yeah.
So we're like, I'm like, oh my gosh. My little boy, he says, Dad, I got to go. I got to get in the house. Let's get out of here. I'm like, no, Braxton, listen. Okay. And so we wait for a few more seconds and nothing. But I tell him, I was like, all right, you go on in the house. And I got my phone out and I probably waited for 30 minutes. You would have been proud of me, right? I wait for about 30 minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I get nothing. And I know part of it was because we were just so loud, right? So I heard nothing else, but very clearly a wood knock and then an answering wood knock. And so that's the first time I really thought to myself, okay, there's something here going on. There's something going on here. And then I go in the house and I tell my dad, I was like, Dad, we heard something outside up in that area, up in the mountains where nobody in the right mind would have been there. Those conditions were brutal. I mean, if somebody was there cutting wood, I'd have heard a chainsaw.
Yeah.
I hear nothing. I don't know anybody in the right mind that would have been in that part of the woods that far under those conditions. And he's like, well, you know, he said, that's crazy. But he said, I didn't tell you this. He said, but, you know, about a month ago, he said, I heard a noise coming from that area. He said, I've lived here for 60 years. I have no idea what it was. He said it was a strange, deep, like, growl. And he said, I'm going to tell you, I'm not scared of much. He said, but I went in the house.
Mm.
And so it just is one of those things where I'm like connecting some of these dots. And I'm thinking, you know, this is an area that's got plenty of water.
Yep.
It is overrun with deer.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And all kinds of other game. So it absolutely sustain, you know, a lot of animals, big animals, with no problems at all. And it's a very remote part of Lick Creek.
Yep.
And of course, you know, that it's perfect habitat. So I'm a believer. When I hear that stuff with my own ears and I'm thinking there's no other explanation that it could be. And I have racked my brain thinking, what could that have been?
Yeah.
And I think about it probably once a week, you know, wanting to hear it again.
Oh,
wanting
yeah.
to hear it again.
Yep.
Right.
So did it sound like wood hitting wood? Is that kind of like was like a branch? You think if you took a branch and smacked against a tree, is that kind of what it sounded like?
It was absolutely a pound, 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 like exact increments of just a pause. And then we were stunned.
you know, and we were stunned. So I'm like, let's listen. And then we hear pound.
Wow.
Pound. Pound from the same area. And I mean, honestly, I had cold chills. And I didn't tell that to Braxton, but I was scared too. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. I'm telling you, because, you know, it's one thing to be out there and you know what you're hearing, but when you don't, and you got your kids around, I mean, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
So, all of us know, or do some hunting, or know hunters, or know people who do quite a bit of hunting. And a lot of times, let's say you're in the woods and trying to catch a deer, or trying to bring a deer in, and you have a rattle bag of antlers, and you kind of shake that thing, or use antlers to kind of rub against each other and make that kind of noise. It didn't sound like that, right? It was more so like somebody beating something against a tree.
Absolutely. Yeah. It wasn't like a deer, you know, trying to shave its antlers off or anything like that. It was just, I mean, the best way I could describe it is like a wooden baseball bat against a tree.
Yeah.
It was, and I'll tell you, that area, it was, you know how it is when it's cold and it was just crisp and clear out, and it echoed all the way down that little valley. To the point that, I mean, I heard it clearly and was just, I was glad to hear it, but also concerned, yeah. You know.
And that's the weird thing with this phenomena, okay, with Bigfoot sightings, with people that encounter, like, you know, I know Mike is an avid listener of, you know, Sasquatch Chronicles and all things Bigfoot. You know, big shout out to Wes Germer. But that's the thing. Like, you hear people that will tell some of the most terrifying, horrifying stories and their experiences. And at the end of the show, Wes is always like, would you want to see one again? And they're always like, well, you know, in the right situation, yeah. And that's just so strange to me, because you have these people that literally in some of these stories are saying, you know, I'm a full-grown man, and I wet myself.
Mm, absolutely.
But oh, yeah. Then they turn right around and say, well, yeah, I would love to see one again.
By golly, I'd do it again.
But it's that weird thing, man. It's that weird, like, it's something that is not supposed to be there. Like, everything in science, everything that we've been taught tells us this creature does not exist, it cannot exist, yet thousands and thousands and thousands of people a year see this, and they have these stories, and they have all these different things. So I'm just to throw the question out there to all present, what do you think the reasoning, and this goes for whoever wants to speak, what do you think the reasoning for these wood knocks are?
Well, I'll tell you, I have thought a lot about that. And they weren't a long distance apart. It seemed like they were, you know, in the same general area, but coming from different locations. So I thought to myself, is it something to maybe warn, you know, that there's people here now, or was it one of those things where I heard it and then it was just a few minutes between it, and then it was the same creature,
yeah,
doing the same knock, but just going in a farther direction. And I don't know, but to me, it felt like, you know, you get this weird feeling sometimes when you're in the woods, okay? And I do take Braxton. During COVID, we spent most of that COVID period in the woods, you know, just kind of looking around. But you get that feeling sometimes where, I don't know, it's just like, my impression was it was alerting that we were there.
Yeah.
That, okay, this is snowy conditions, and, you know, but there's somebody here, me and my son, there's somebody here. So we need to be aware that it's bad conditions, but there's some crazy people like me out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, hey, there's a guy here.
And that very well could be
a guy here.
It very well could be alerting.
And that's pretty common for most animals, right? When you think about deer,
most
of the time, if you don't see a deer, but you hear a deer snorting at you or blowing at you before you even realize that the deer's even close to you,
absolutely,
they have smelled you or sensed you, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of their mechanism to say, hey, like, I'm here, and I know that you're here, but let's not hurt each other.
Right.
Let's just kind of be aware that we're both in this area at the same time. Mm-hmm. And cats do the same thing when they meow. Dogs do the same thing when they bark.
Well, birds do it.
Birds do it.
Crows.
It's a very common natural, I guess, animal instinct to kind of just like, hey, you know, don't walk up here.
Something's here.
I'm here.
That's it.
Don't walk up here. Like, we don't want to scare each other. I don't want to have a confrontation with you.
Right.
Like snakes do the same thing, right? Yep. They rattle or they raise up and they kind of let you know that they're present so that you don't intrude on their territory wherever they're at.
And the majority of these stories that you hear, that's what it sounds like. It's that these things are trying to ward off somebody coming.
That was my other impression, was that, okay, just alerting that, okay, there's somebody here. But also, I got the distinct impression, like, hey, you stay where you are.
Yeah.
And I was intimidated a little bit. I was intimidated a little bit because it was clear enough that it got my attention.
What are your thoughts on it, Mike? The wood knocks or just Bigfoot in general?
You know, I've listened to, you know, probably 450 to 500 podcasts on Bigfoot itself. And most of these people are talking about these wood knocks. You know, depending on the podcast and who's on that podcast and the story or the circumstance that was involved, most of those people, it seems like it's obvious, it's an obvious form of communication.
Yeah.
And it goes hand in hand with what you're talking about. Whether they're trying to talk to you and keep you to stay there, or they're talking to another creature, another species in another part of the woods, letting them know that, hey, somebody's in our area.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the general consensus, is one of those two things, it seems like. Now, I'll add a little bit more to Brent's story. I know of two people that have had encounters in the 70s and the 90s, probably from the way the crow flies from where Brent heard his knocks, probably within a couple of miles, somewhere called the middle of the world.
Yep.
Now, all these gentlemen know where the middle of the world is. Obviously, it's an incredibly remote place. Just like Brent said, full of deer, full of large things, plenty of water. So some large animal could live there and no one would ever know. And, you know, some of my family have ginsenged a lot in their life, and they've traveled these woods relentlessly, and they've seen a lot of crazy things. And one of the encounters was in that same area Brent's talking about, they actually witnessed one. He was coming back to his vehicle from ginsenging, and he got within about 300 or 400 yards of where his vehicle was at, and he thought somebody was looking in the back of his truck. And so when he hollered at the gentleman, or whatever, he thought it was a person, it stood up, and he claims it was big, hairy, and it just stepped off over the hill, and it was gone.
Wow.
Now, if that's a true story, it's a family member of mine. I believe it to be a true story. I'm not sure. But it's in the same general area that Brent's talking about. And another story is that a person that lives on the mountain that I grew up on, which is at the head of Lick Creek, Ramsey Ridge, a person that lives out there, their parents lived in the middle of the world as well, and they claimed for about a year and a half to see one quite often.
Hmm.
Again, I don't know if these things are true, but we all know how remote Dickinson County is. We all know how much water is there. We all know how much potential food sources are there for these things, these creatures. So who's to say one's not there?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
And where there's one, there's probably multiple.
Absolutely.
Well, that's what I would think. Like, there's not very many animals, you know. Just, you look biologically, you look in nature. Not many animals, even if you have animals that, you know, will hunt alone or, you know, do like big cats, there's still usually more than one around. Like most biological creatures don't want to spend their entire life lonely. I think loneliness is probably a universal emotion.
Well, it's the animal instinct, right?
I mean,
what do we do? We worry about food.
Yep.
We worry about water.
Yep.
And we worry about reproduction.
Absolutely.
Right? We want to make more of who we are.
Right. Or even just practice that.
Hey, Justin was good at that from a young age.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's even us four men sitting here. Like it's a constant driver of who we are, is to try to just make sure that basic instincts are taken care of. So where we think there may be one, or where we think there may be even two, there's more than likely a multitude of them, because there has to be, because they. To be able to survive and reproduce and have an environment that they can thrive in and live in and protect their young and continue to carry on the line of who they are. That's no matter what we are value-wise, where we fall along the lines of politically or emotionally or spiritually, we all have a desire to make sure that our family line, our name, and who we are, our DNA, our genetics, our characteristics, like, we want those things to be passed on. That's part of being an animal nature, and it's part of our instinct. And it's no different for humans and dogs and cats and even Bigfoot, right? So where we've had this information, where we've had these stories of hearing these things, where we think we've seen one, or people have seen one, or we've heard one, where there is one, there has to be more than one, because that's just the way that life works,
you would
right?
Think so.
It's just the way it has to be.
You would
think so. It's extremely interesting that even our little small world, Dixon County, which is totally secluded from the rest of the world, pretty much, right? And that's one of the reasons why we love it so much. There's just a multitude of interesting things that take place in instances in which we've seen things that we can't simply explain. And human nature for us is we want to be able to give an explanation for the things that we don't know about, right? When I have something that shows up and one of my girls does something crazy and I don't know why they're doing it, the first thing that my wife and I do is we want to explain, why are they acting like this? Why are they behaving in this way? And a lot of it boils down to just basic instincts. That's just what they are. That's just the kids they are. That's how they react to the season of life that we're in. Brent and I had a conversation today about his kids, you know, being in sports and different things and having to kind of shape life around where the seasons of life that they are. That's us humans doing the same thing. Every other animal does the exact same thing. And so it makes total sense to me that Brent has had this experience and he heard this, we'll call it a Bigfoot, knocking in the woods to kind of let them know that, hey, I know you're there. You know that I'm here. We're both just trying to carry on and survive. Let's not cross paths, because if we cross paths, then something's going to have to happen. One of us is going to have to alpha another one and let you know this is my territory, this is my land, and this is where I want to kind of continue to grow my kids and grow my family. And the crazy thing for me is that for the longest time, complete, total, no belief in Bigfoot at all, right? A great story. Love reading about it, much like Loch Ness Monster or UFOs or any of this crazy stuff that you hear about.
I saw one of those.
Chupacabra.
Chupacabra, like all these things. Dog man, whatever, right? Black smoke, shadow people. Like, for the longest time, I was completely against believing that people had these experiences and just thinking it was just a psyche thing or a mental block that we had or a way to manifest things unexplained by explaining something supernatural. But there are so many accounts.
Yep.
Not just nationwide, but in our little small area. There are so many people who have had so many accounts of things very similar to this that you have to say, you have to agree that, you know what? There's got to be something out there that we simply just can't explain. So this leads me to my question. And it's the same question we ask a lot of people we have on.
This is a long question.
It is. You know, I get on my diatribe.
He's a teacher.
I get on my diatribe sometimes. So we'll all four sit here and agree Bigfoot is real.
Correct.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, what is the reason that you think that we have never had what we would consider solid, physical, video evidence? Why is Bigfoot so elusive in your guys' mind?
Well, I mean, that's the question, right? With me in that instance, when I got out, you know, I didn't have my phone in my hand or anything like that. I wasn't thinking like, okay, I'm going to have a Bigfoot experience. I think most of the time people are just, you're taken unaware.
Yeah.
And so as I, you know, as I stood there, I was really almost immobilized. I couldn't really move. We just looked at me, my kid. We just looked at each other. And it took me a few seconds to process what I need to do. By the time I got my wits to me and got in there and got my camera to maybe make a recording, it was over.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens so fast.
And I think it's that more often than not.
It just happens.
There's
so fast.
Not a whole lot of Bigfoot experts.
I'm going to go find it, and I'm going to see it. It just doesn't happen.
There's not a whole lot of people. And like we talked to Dr. Russell Jones, and he was talking about, each year, there's less and less and less people in the woods. So there's less people looking for it. Obviously, there's going to be less people. And just like Brent in that situation, just like me seeing the UFO the other night, dude, in the moment, that's the last thing you're thinking about. For some reason, you would think, especially as like we are with a podcast of the weird and investigators in some of the things that we talk about, you would think that the very first thing I would have done is went Instagram Live and done all this, but I didn't even pull my phone out until it was already halfway across the sky and away from me. And I was like, oh yeah, holy crap, I should try to video this. And then by that time, it just looks like a star just going across. It's a weird thing when you're in the moment. Again, it gets to that like psychological point, and this is just my opinion. It's that psychological point where you're in that position where you're thinking, this is not supposed to be happening, but it is. So what do I do with it? How do I react to what's going on? And more often than not, I mean, you know, people have fight or flight.
Yeah.
I mean, when something's going on that makes you uncomfortable, you have a fight or flight or freeze response.
I froze.
I froze.
I would have frozen.
Literally and figuritively. It was freezing outside.
Little PP in hand, I would have frozen as well.
P-R-E.
That was it. That's all I made it to.
It's just stuck on E.
Burning sensations all the way down through my urethra.
It just said burn.
And I'll tell you, I think it's a very intelligent creature.
Oh, I agree.
I live with my wife and kids, but there's times they do silly things or funny things. And I try to get my kids doing something or my little pet dog. I was like, oh, that was such a cute moment. Let's see if I can get him doing that. And I never get that picture again. And I'm with them 24/7.
Yep.
And I don't get that picture. So how hard would it be to get a picture of my wife and kids in the woods that I hear once every 10 years? Absolutely. It just took me by surprise.
I like that a lot.
Well, that accounts for probably 90 to 95% of all encounters.
Yeah.
But it doesn't answer the question of the people that are so-called experts that are in the field researching, using the latest video equipment, trying to capture these things. So how do you answer that question? And I feel like after listening to, you know, like I said, 450 to 500 different podcasts, obviously Sasquatch Chronicles and all these people. But in my opinion, I think these things are highly intelligent. I think they live in the woods. They have a greater sense of intelligence than a normal animal does.
Yeah.
Almost in between a human and an animal. They feel emotion. They understand what's going on. They have a heightened sense of awareness that most animals don't have. I think that's one of the biggest reasons. I also think the government knows exactly what these creatures are.
Yeah, me too.
Let's get into it.
Here we go.
I mean, I really believe that, guys. I've heard too many and read too many stories. I truly believe the government knows what they are. There's a migration pattern with these things. The government knows this. One of the Sasquatch Chronicles experts had talked about that on one of the episodes of Sasquatch Chronicles. And I'm a firm believer that the government knows exactly what they are and where they come from. Now, I can't answer that question. I'm not sure the government will ever release that information. But I truly believe that. So.
Well, here's the thing, too. And here's always my question. Why? If the government knows about these things, you know, I could see everything else. I could see extraterrestrial life. I could see, you know, super advanced aircraft that, you know, whether it be military or, you know, something not of this world, I could see all of this stuff for like national security or world security. But why creature? Why Bigfoot? Because I also believe, firmly believe, that the government knows exactly about these things, because you have way too many accounts of people hitting one, shooting one, something like this, reporting it, and then all of a sudden you have, what do you call Bigfoot men in black? Men in brown? Men in white?
Hairy men.
Government officials of some
government
sort.
Government contractors.
Showing up, loading this thing up in a truck, and nobody ever hears anything else about it. So I agree, but the question I always have is why? Why this creature?
Because, Justin, Bigfoot originated from some type of portal that government is controlling.
Here we go.
And there not only is there Bigfoot creatures, but there are a multitude of creatures that they are either moving through dimensions through a portal, where they are creating to use at some future war that may show up. And yes, it was the greatest way to hide a group of super soldiers than having some type of creatures be able to show up in some country somewhere and destroy things. That may be one of the reasons. Now, I do not believe that. That was totally for Justin's portal theory that
gosh,
he has
I love
on all
that.
Things Bigfoot.
I do think they could jump through portals.
I think
they can move the ranch.
I think they can move in and out of portals.
It's always portals with you.
Hey, man, I can't help it. They're there.
Much right? Like UFOs.
Businesses say they are.
Much like UFOs, much like JFK assassination, much like COVID protocols, much like
Bigfoot killed JFK. That's what you're trying to tell me right now.
Pretty much. Much like digital currency, everything else going on in the world right now. I just think it's simply just a control thing, right? If people are in the woods and they're seeing these Bigfoot, and then the government comes in, a gaggle of Bigfeets, and the government comes in and controls what the narrative is, it's simply just a 100% them being able to control the common man, much like us. So the reason that we don't get more prevalent information about Dogman or Bigfoot or whatever cryptid you want to insert into this conversation is simply about the people who are in control continuing to stay in control. That's why I think that they are so urgent in squashing all of these Sasquatch. Squashing the squash. All of these sightings and these things that you hear all the time. I don't like the government, right? And I don't think that in everything they do for us, try to do for us to for our greater good as a society, is simply not for our greater good. It's for our greater not good and for their good. That's why I think there's such a stopgap in the information.
Control freaks.
Control freaks, yes.
Control freaks.
The people who are in charge are control freaks, and they like to control things, and that's just the way that it is.
Well, I'll take it a step further, and here's what I honestly believe. Honestly. I mean, I do believe that they
move. Don't lie to us. We don't want you to lie to us.
I do believe that they
move. I said you guys were trustworthy and respectful.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody out there already knows better. So, look, we're not giving them anything they don't already know about. I firmly believe that Bigfeets, Dogmans, all these weird hybrid creatures, I believe that they come from this kind of Nephilim origin. That's my firm beliefs. I believe that it goes all the way back to the beginning. I believe it goes back to the fallen angels, all that different stuff, and we won't dive headfirst and get crazy deep into that. But I believe that that's where they originated from, and where they, whether the government is doing it with like DNA manipulation and splicing all this different stuff, or if this has just been a race that may have been extremely prevalent and populous at one time and is just slowly. But I believe that we don't release this because once we start releasing it and say, okay, this is real, then the testing begins. Then the origin, you know, all the lab work is coming back. And where do these things come from? And I think it's one of those things, too, that if big feats are real, and if they have this Nephilim tie, you know, whether it was DNA manipulation before the flood, all this different stuff, whatever, you go down that rabbit hole. But then you have to have, you're giving credence to the Bible then. You're saying that this is true. That's just me personally. That's what I, but I do believe that because of their fallen angel ancestry, that some of these woo-woo weird things that people see and report with Bigfoot, the reason that I believe that they can jump in and out of portals and in between places, maybe different dimensions, maybe parallel universes, is because of their ancestry. That's what I believe.
It's always portals with you.
I can't help it. It's always, real, dude.
It can't just be
it's real.
It can't
if
just
Ryan
be
a, was here, he'd say string theory.
It can't just theory. Be a species of something that is just
I don't
really
think it's
smart.
I think it's flesh and blood. I do think Bigfoot is flesh and blood, but I believe that he's flesh and blood with a little extra oomph, okay. Extra fallen angel. Like if Bigfoot, okay. Like if the X-Men were real, Bigfoot is an X-Man.
He's
a mutant.
The
yeah,
beast.
He's the Beast.
That's right.
He's a mutant that has these powers, but he's like the Beast and Nightcrawler had a baby to where he's flesh and blood here and he's ripping people to shreds and then whoop, he's over like, you know, 30 feet away and doing the same thing. That's just my belief.
Right,
because so there's so many, dude, there's just so many accounts of footprints just stopping in the middle of a field, or you know, somebody seeing this thing and actually going after him, like you're saying that you would. I don't
Absolutely.
Think that I would, but like somebody going after him, and then all of a sudden they feel this electric, not like infrasound, you know, we can explain away infrasound biologically, but like they hit this static wall, they say that they can feel this electricity, like they can. And then all of a sudden, boom, gone. I mean, there's a lot of these things that you just...
So my explanation for all for that type of disappearance, right? And I've talked about this before.
Portals.
No, not portals. I think it's an inherent trait that they have that they are either vibrating on a color scheme that we just simply cannot see with our eyes, right?
Bigfoot
frequency. And I've made this very much a theory that I have, that much like people are colorblind to certain colors, we as humans, or on the converse of that, them as Bigfeets, have an ability to get on a color spectrum that we just can't recognize. Right,
and maybe that's why we can't take
so
a clear
picture.
So we
simply become colorblind to their environment, right? So they're able to, much like a chameleon can change, or and I'm not talking about cloaking or anything like that, but they just, in their fat layers or in their fur, they have a trait they have developed that they are able to not be seen by our naked eyes. That's how I explain away your portal theory. I don't think big feats are portal jumpers. I think we
yes,
just simply
portal jumping
we
big
just
feats.
Can't see them on our
the
eye plane.
That's
much like
title.
People who are colorblind through different for red, green, or blue, or whatever the case may be. All right, so that's beside the point. What other do you boys have any other stories or experiences with Bigfoot?
Well, I was reluctant to discuss this one, but you have brought it out of me.
Absolutely. Yes. That's why
and
we do AI, baby.
I'll tell you what brought it was you were talking about, like, these creatures are operating on such a skilled level that they're there in plain sight. We just can't see them.
Right.
Sometimes they choose maybe to reveal themselves for whatever reason. But, you know, I had another encounter.
Yes.
And, It was an awkward encounter by the creature, and so the only way I can explain it, like why did I see this? Because they are such masters of their environment. The only way I can explain it was I saw a juvenile, awkward. It was awkward. You know how our kids are awkward sometimes.
Listen, I love the awkward teenagers.
Well, let me
they
tell you.
Smell bad. They smell like body. They smell like Axe body spray and bad decisions.
And they show up. They show up sometimes
on your anniversary night when you don't need to see them.
Exactly.
You don't meet them by that night.
Exactly.
They show up.
We're just wrestling, baby. I promise. Mommy, you're just wrestling.
It looks like Dad's winning.
They
Dad,
show
make
up.
Or tap.
They show up when you don't need to see them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. Now, a lot of these, the other experience was with my son Braxton. I hope he doesn't hear me telling this story, but it's me and Braxton. He probably won't even listen. He's a teenager. But anyways, we were going to school early one morning, and I think I've only told Mike this, okay, and my wife. But anyways, we were going to school early one morning, and this incident occurred near Fremont.
Okay.
The highway department. Now, it is in an area. We're there a lot, sometimes late at night coming back from a ball game. We're there sometimes early going to school. So we're there frequently, and we see a lot of animals. And the only explanation I have as to why we see so many animals, like we've seen baby bobcats, we've seen bear, deer, I have seen coyotes. We have seen every raccoon, every imaginable animal that you would say, okay, they're here. So my explanation is they're, you know, during the wintertime, they have that salt they put on the road. So it's attractive to a lot of animals.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're going to school.
That's a good thought.
I'm trying to process this.
That would explain a lot of these wintertime Bigfoot
crossings.
Right. And so we were heading to school that morning. And, you know, if you've ever gone to school, you're a little bit, you know, I'm a little bit like out of it until I get there and, you know, the bell rings. But we, you know, I'm focusing and we're driving and I see something. It's in a remote spot, but within a mile of the highway department and it's storage of salt. So I see something come from the left side of the road. It's in the road, one bounce in the road. It's completely on the bank and gone. But I did not trust my eyes. Okay. What I saw, I thought, what is that? You know, what in the world am I looking at? I stopped in the road and I said to Braxton, I was like, Braxton, tell me, what did you see? And he said, Dad, that looked like a chimpanzee.
Oh,
let
wow.
me tell you, its back was solid black. I saw the solid black back. It was probably about, I would say, and it looked like it was on its, it hunched over. Like it wasn't standing upright. Like it just bounced, almost the way a chimpanzee would be on its knuckles. Okay. And it was completely black on its back. And it was a little bit lighter underneath it. And I said, honey, that's exactly what I saw. I said, I don't know what's going on. And when I get to school
wild,
that morning,
dude.
I am concerned, right? I'm just thinking to myself, what in the world? Well, since then I have bought a GoPro camera to put on my vehicle and I've not had the same encounter. All I get is coal trucks coming at me. You know what I mean?
On your side of the road.
On my side of the road, going very fast.
Yes.
And I'm in the ditch most of the time. But I don't know. I mean, did I see this because it was a juvenile and it was out and it just didn't follow. It just didn't understand, you know, like kids don't understand, you know, don't be here at this time. And you know, I imagine it got a butt whipping when it got home.
Yeah.
But honestly, I cannot explain it. And it's just one of those things that I think about that a lot.
Wow. Yeah, I bet.
But I don't know that much. I've not dug that much into juvenile Bigfoot, but you know, do you hear stories sometimes of juvenile Bigfoots just doing
that's weird stuff? That's very similar to a whole bunch of accounts that of people who say they have had a pet, say, or a friend, juvenile Sasquatch, or that, you know, there's a couple of accounts of them playing, you know, for weeks on end
with kids,
you know, kind of the same size and the same age.
It's either that or it's one of those kind of things that they get curious. You know, they stray a little farther than what they're supposed to do.
Just explore.
Like a regular kid.
Like a regular kid would, yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're in this weird spot that they're like,
I shouldn't be here.
I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be
seen.
Yeah. That's wild.
That's nuts.
That's pretty.
I mean, and that happened, I guess it was probably in the fall.
Yeah.
It was, you know, sometime around October, November, something like that.
Well, and still, you're talking Fremont.
Yeah.
You're not talking very far.
It's not far.
I mean, you're talking, okay, Lick Creek, Ramsey Ridge,
You stay on that road.
It's all
Dog Branch, Fremont.
It's a
straight line.
And that's a pretty good size water source.
Oh yeah.
And that's between like my daughter Pippa, when we go to church that way, she says when we go down Fremont, she always says, "Daddy, we're in between the two butt cheeks," because she thinks the two mountains there are butt cheeks, right? And she's in the middle of them.
That's awesome.
Kind of a crossroads there of them getting, and then once they get to either the top of Caney Ridge or the top of where they were Fremont there, they could pretty much go where they wanted to and get to wherever you'd never see them again.
Yeah.
That's kind of a major crossway there that they would have to take to get to different places or locations at all.
Wow, that's super interesting.
That is crazy.
And you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, they would say, well, maybe it was a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, it could have been. I don't know. But my first instinct was like, this is different.
Now, yeah.
I have seen a bear before. You know, I live in an area where there are a lot of bears, as we all know.
Yeah.
But honestly, I've only had one encounter the entire time I've lived on Lick Creek where I saw a bear, pulled up on a bear. And how many are in the woods? You should see them all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But I only saw one. I've lived there for most of my life.
And we think that these Bigfeets are probably a lot more intelligent than a bear.
Much more mobile than a bear.
Absolutely.
The movement was more of a hop and gone.
Did it hop like from a hunched position?
Absolutely. Like it was hunched over the road and then pow, pow.
And bears don't move like that.
No,
it reminds me of people seeing these things like doing the spider crawl, like this weird spider crawl kind of, I don't know, that like the way they talk about it, it's so different that they don't know what it is. Like, they don't even know what to call it or classify it because it moves so different.
And when most people see a bear, you can explain the movement of a bear. Like,
we've
all seen black
even if they stand up.
Yeah,
we've all seen.
You very distinctly, hey.
It's awkward.
You're not going to mistake that for anything else other than a bear.
Right.
Right? You're going to know instantly, it's the way they move.
Well, now, I don't know. I will say this. In the exact same area that Brent's talking about, I was driving home from somewhere. It was late at night. This was only like 2 weeks ago. And I didn't have my glasses on. And I need my glasses all the time. All of a sudden, I see eyeshine over toward the ditch, right? Just yellow eyeshine. And it's little bitty eyeshine. And as I was getting closer, I was like, This is a little person. Like, this is like some of the little people.
Be politically correct, please.
No, I'm not talking about midgets. I'm talking about, like, you know, like the Cherokee little people. Like, this is a little.
Moon-eyed people?
This is a little people.
Okay.
This is a little person.
Okay.
Like, it was like, I don't know, 2 feet. 2 feet tall. And I get really, really, really close, and I find out. It was a raccoon standing up the whole time. It was a raccoon the whole time. He didn't even care that I was going by.
Man.
But now, that's totally different than what Brent's talking about. I just wanted to throw that out there.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, you want to process it and make sense of what you saw.
So you're not
concerned about it for the rest of your life.
I want it to be a little people.
Right. You're trying to process it. So what logically happened?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I love about these experiences, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, and I've talked about this before, and I will always take the chance to go on a diatribe about how we have to be able to explain the things that are unexplainable. It is part of our human nature. We have to be able to reason and put some logic behind seeing this chimp-like thing jump across the road.
Like,
be able to explain why I saw this. And then when we get to a point where we can't explain it anymore, like, I don't know what
then
it was.
Then we start a podcast.
And then that's where all this kind of stuff kind of gets into the weeds, and we have these conversations about, like, I think this is what I saw, but I'm not for sure this is what I saw. And that's the beauty of having conversations about Bigfeet.
Yeah.
And that's why so many people have these same types of experiences where, guys, it has to be something that is physically real.
It absolutely has to be. And if we're going, okay, so I come across something else today, and we've talked about this a little bit, Lance, on the show about, okay, Brent's experience is super weird. This thing didn't jump into a portal and just disappear. It headed on up the mountain really, really fast. Okay, if these things are super fast and agile and mobile as they are and can just get from point A to point B really quickly, in the little bit of research that I was doing around where we are right now in Harrisonburg, when I was just looking at things, okay, if I got a little downtime, what do I want to go do? Well, really, really close by, you have the Grand Caverns, the Luray Caverns, and the Shenandoah Caverns, okay?
I'm going to the Luray Caverns in a couple of weeks.
And that's
going
to be awesome.
Videos coming soon, you folks.
Yes.
Excellent.
But say these things are just completely flesh and blood, just a biological creature, no superpowers, no mutant Nephilim, fallen angel blood. They're not jumping into portals. What would be the best place for these things to get away, to get to quickly, and to hide? It'd be like a cave system, right?
Absolutely.
Somewhere underground. What do we have all around the house?
Caves galore.
And abandoned mines. They're everywhere. So we know, especially like down Fremont, where Brent's talking about. Oh, shoot, yeah. There's been 70 blue million mines there at some point.
And this just hit me. You drive through Fremont in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You head up the hill there past the water plant.
Yep.
And what does it smell like?
Bigfoot.
Skunk ape.
Bigfoot's butt.
Got that.
It's got that terrible. Absolutely.
What if this whole time?
Absolutely.
What if this
whole time? And maybe that's the way they can mask the way, you know, just
holy
the way that they
crap,
smell.
Lance.
It smells like sulfur and all
that's
the
genius.
Terrible. Like, every time we drive by, I roll the window down and I tell Haley, Haley,
yeah.
What'd you eat last night?
Good,
I get the same reaction, getting smacked in the head, right. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
Never gets maybe old, it's though. Just a way they can kind of mask
the smell.
Able to, you know, if they're able to be not seen, we've talked about how intelligent they are. We know they can smell.
Yeah.
What's the best way to mask themselves is by using that sulfury smell that's around that area. They can cross around there, and then nobody's none the wiser of them using that.
And who is going to go toward that smell?
Nobody.
It's a way to keep you
another
putrid. I mean, it's one of those things, like, you try to get out of there as quick as you can because it smells so bad.
It's another defensive, like, off-putting tactic, you know? If these things, and I firmly believe they want to be left alone, or else we would have extreme valid proof. If these things want to be left alone, they're going to use, and they're going to evolve in a way that they can use whatever in their tool belt to be able to put off the thing at the top of the food chain. And that's us.
Absolutely.
If we find it, we're going to kill it. That's what we do.
So lethal.
You are lethal.
Lethal.
You are lethal. You scared me a little bit right now.
All right, guys. Anything else? You have any other experiences or stories that you can think of? I've got another question for you in a second. But any other Bigfoot that you've heard? Family that you've had maybe had this conversation or maybe talked about anything at all?
Well, yeah, sure.
You know, we could keep this going forever.
Another one of our fellow
Haitians.
Guys.
Haitians. I like Haitians.
I don't know if he'd want me to mention his name, but I'm going to anyway. Kenneth Branham. We all know Kenneth.
Kenneth Branham.
The one and only.
The one and only.
I can't wait till you're
Kenneth Branham. A couple of issues. We need to get him on this podcast.
100%.
We got to get him here. Kenneth being my first cousin and all, he had an experience that he could not explain. And we need to bring him on and let him tell this story.
He actually told me this the other day.
Okay, cool. So Kenneth has shared this.
I'm excited.
So to make a long story short, after a storm, whatever, they're cleaning up some areas over in the, where was it at? Lower Twin area.
Yep.
Lower Twin area. It's over next to the dam in Hayside, Virginia, if anybody.
The John F. Flanagan Dam.
Amen.
Jefferson National Forest. Dixon County's baby.
Well, anyway, he was, they dropped him off. He was doing some sawing up some trees. It had blocked some paths and some hiking areas and that kind of thing. And some things were being tossed at him. Okay?
Wait, it's like somebody like, throwing something at you.
Yes, yeah, like rocks, limbs,
small rocks.
Like really? Rocks. Yeah. And he thought it was his buddies that he works with every day because they get along great. Sure, They're awesome. Great guys to work with. We coach with them. Great people. So he thought that's what it was, that Luke was messing with him. And, you know, he'd cut his chainsaw off and he'd look around and nobody around. And, you know, he's like, man, this is crazy. This can't be happening. He'd go back to saw and same stuff happened. This is crazy. You know, and finally, he cuts his chainsaw off. He goes up to the top of the hill and he's looking for Luke and them. And Luke's sawing on the other side of the hill.
Nowhere close.
And he can't explain this. So, you know, I'm sure he told you this the other day, JK, and that kind of thing. But that's pretty remarkable. One other story, his father was worked for Jefferson National Forest for 40-some years. The old station used to be right across from Clinch Valley College, mm-hmm, or UVA-wise, mm-hmm, the baseball field there.
Yep.
His dad worked there, and what, you know, we all know Kenneth. They've got several sisters. They had five kids, and he would fly out west and fight forest fires. Mm-hmm. What Kenny would do, and you know, Kenneth could probably tell this story better than I. But they flew in to Washington State to fight forest fires, and they flew in on helicopter. Obviously, took a plane to Washington State, and then got on a helicopter, and they flew out into the forest area where they were logging. Apparently, these loggers were complaining all week long about while they were clearing these trees out of things being tossed at them. Now, Kenny and that group just arrived to fight forest fires. And they're in the middle of nowhere. And they're staying in tents. And Kenny said one morning, these guys, you know, were freaked out. You know, what went on? Apparently, they bring their diesel fuel in 55-gallon oil drums. And that's at that point in time, this was probably late 70s, early 80s type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got these pumps that they pump the diesel fuel over from the barrels into the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these barrels are gone. Two of these 55-gallon oil drums are gone, fully loaded. And these loggers are like, what are we going to do? We're in the middle of nowhere in our diesel fuel. What's going to happen? Anyway, after it broke daylight, they started hunting and they finally found them. And they had what looked like had been tossed.
Wow.
Crazy. About 35 or 40 yards.
Holy.
Dang.
And it landed on the corner, or not really a corner of a barrel, but, you know, at the edge of the top of a barrel, and it hit, bounced and flipped and then busted. And the diesel fuel leaked out, obviously. And just fascinating story.
Wow.
That's nuts.
And so, you know, I mean, this is some of the things that just fascinate me about this subject. When I was a little boy at Sand Lake Elementary, we all went to...
Whoop, whoop.
Well, Lance didn't go to Sand Lake.
Not.
You went to...
Come to love and appreciate.
There is several books in that library on Bigfoot, and I would get those books, and I would read those books. JK May, too. I don't know if Brent did.
All the weird kid.
But, you know, I loved them. And that started my fascination with this thing. A lot of people laugh at me thinking, oh, this thing's not real. But I'm a firm believer that there's way too many instances, mm-hmm, way too many accounts.
That's where I'm at.
And then when I started listening to the Sasquatch Chronicles thing with Wes, and Wes's ability to interview.
Yeah.
And how he asked similar questions to everybody all over the country, all over the world. And it doesn't matter where you're at. It's a very similar account.
Yep.
The creature looks the same.
Yep.
The females look the same. The males look the same. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's in Washington State or if it's in Florida, if it's in Alabama, if it's in England. There's some similarities there. These people are seeing something.
Oh, yeah. Where there is smoke,
there's fire.
There's 100% fire. Of the time.
So I'm a firm believer in it, and people may listen to this podcast and laugh at me, but I don't care.
No, look, dude.
It's therapeutic.
It is. It is therapeutic.
We talk about building the tribe all the time on here. And obviously, you know, we've joined and helped to build this big community of people that are interested in these things, the people that aren't satisfied with the status quo, people that aren't okay with just being force-fed what is supposed to be normal. We're building this tribe of a bunch of weirdos that, and
well
what
said.
We're starting to do is not only are we building this tribe, you know, away from us through social media, you know, through the Discord, through all this stuff going on, we're starting to do it right here locally too. I mean, me and these boys have talked about, hey, when summer rolls around, school's out, all this different stuff, we're throwing some packs on, we're going Bigfooting, we're going squatching, we're going to go find, like, we're doing something. We're going to check out some of these reports. We're going to find a cemetery where people seen Dracula in a glass coffin and this entity turning into smoke and a big giant snake. We're going to go find this stuff.
Absolutely.
And
can't wait
to do it.
But that's what I'm trying to say is, this kind of stuff, being able to sit down and find like-minded people with the same interests, it is therapeutic. It's good because there's a lot of times before we started this podcast that I would sit down and watch these things and be reading about this and try to have these conversations with people in the family or people at work. And it was just like, I would either get called crazy,
right,
or it would fall on deaf ears. Mm. Like people just act like I wasn't even speaking. That's still what goes on with Monica. Bless her heart. I love her to death and she's a saint. But if I start talking about any of this stuff, she just zones completely out. I mean, volume down to zero. It's like, hey, I heard you. That's it. That's it. That's all you're getting. That's why Connor, thank God, I had one offspring that's a super weirdo too, because like me and
that's
him, good. Next weekend, Withful, UFO Fest, baby. We're going there. We're hanging out with a bunch of UFO nerds like us. It's going to be a blast.
So before we get out of here.
Yeah, go ahead, Lance.
We have to ask every guest that comes on, because it wouldn't be Appalachian Intelligence if it was not this question that was asked. Both of you gentlemen, giving us great information about Bigfoot. We've had what I think has been a fantastic conversation about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But we have to ask, we ask everybody who comes on, what are your thoughts or have you had experiences with UFOs?
Well, I have seen things in the sky that I don't know for sure what it is. I've not had any direct experience with it. But I know this is crazy. My dad could tell this story, okay? But when I was, I guess I was maybe 7 or 8. I don't know what my dad was thinking. But back then, we didn't have much TV. We had one channel. It was mm-hmm. one channel.
And you had to go turn the rabbit ears.
You had an antenna.
And if a story had, you had to follow the antenna up the mountain. And
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So we were in the woods at weird times. And in the general same area, okay, that I told you story earlier. General same area. Okay, my dad, me, and my brother. Okay, he's about 4 or 5 years older than me. They were quicker than me. They made it up the mountain a little bit faster, but they wanted to get up there and fix the TV. I guess it was a football game. We were trying to watch.
Yeah.
So they got up there, and you know I'm behind them. They kind of left me behind a little bit, but I sort of veer off a little bit to the side, and end up, you know, confused, scared. And so I just turn around and go straight back to the light of the house. Well, they went all the way to the top and had no knowledge that I was back at the house. And so my mom, she was probably mad at my dad and my brother for leaving me, but she was terrified because when she saw me come back, she's like, my gosh, where is your dad? Where's your brother? And I was like, I don't know. You know, I guess they went up the mountain. She said, I saw a bright light in that general area. She said, I don't know what it was. And I mean, she just hugged me and was glad I was there. But she was concerned that something had happened and they were gone. Because she saw something she couldn't explain in the sky in that same general area that at the time, my mom, she just called it a bright light. You know, and my dad came back. They were worried sick because, you know, they'd looked all over the place for me. It was something they'll never forget because I was terrified of being kind of in the woods there by myself just for a few minutes. But then seeing my mom so scared of what she saw even is what stuck with me. Wow. Right, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's a UFO story, but it was something in that general area with a bright light that, I mean, my mom, you know, she saw that.
That gave me chills, and UFO stories usually don't really give me chills, but that story gave me chills.
That's an area we probably should. I mean, that's an area that I intend as, you know, maybe at the end of the winter when I can get in the woods a little bit, not worry about snakes and whatnot, we can get up there and we're going to look in that general area to see kind of what,
let's do
what
we can see up there. Do.
What is in the area? There's a lot of stuff that happens.
That's a question that we all, that is, in my eyes, that is the question. Why so much weird happens in specific places?
Right.
Why? That's my ultimate question always. Like, yeah, I want to connect everything, and my mind's always trying to weave together some kind of web of all of this different stuff in the paranormal. You know, I'm classifying everything. But that's always my biggest question. Why do you have these hot spots? Why are they there? Is it electromagnetic field? Is it, you know, some kind of magnetism of the earth? Is it, you know, what is it? Is it portals? I think it's portals.
I don't think it's
portals. Mike.
Well, I definitely have a UFO story.
Yes.
Not one that I witnessed, but someone that I know would not lie and has someone there that can absolutely say it happened. Two people witnessed it. You guys maybe don't know my mom very well, but you know who she is. In 1996, I'm in college. It's in November, late November. The reason I know this specifically is because my dad and my brother are going deer hunting in Bath County. My first cousin that lived across the road from my mom and dad, where I grew up, he was graduating from Marine basic training. So that family had went to his graduation. His youngest brother, Nathan Branham, mm-hmm. we all know Nathan, had an SOL test, I believe, and so he had to take that test. So he couldn't go to that graduation. So he was going to spend the night with mom, go to school the next day, take the test, whatever. Mom was by herself. At this point in time, my mama and papa was living and about a half a mile from us, very remote area. We've all been up on Ramsey Ridge. We know what it looks like. Very remote. Brent, you and your wife come up trick-or-treating up there all the time.
Absolutely. Love them. Love them.
Good people. Remote. Candy.
Good people.
That's right.
So mom and Nathan drive out to my grandparents' house, my mom's parents, just to check on them. They're all elderly. Cook them dinner. You have dinner with them. Wash their dishes, whatever, hang out with them a few minutes, then go back home. Mm-hmm. On the way back home, mom notices something. It's dark. Again, it's in the winter. Hovering over the tree line. Three lights, red, green, yellow. Mom said it looked identical to a stoplight, but much bigger. And she was like, didn't want to scare Nathan. Hoping he didn't see what she saw. She was just driving slowly. Now, in between my grandparents' house and my mom and dad's house is nothing but trees, nothing but a paved road, incredibly remote. Mom said it became evident that Nathan had saw it. So she stops the vehicle. They roll down the windows. It's seriously just what mom described. Well, she could take a baseball and throw it, and she felt like she could hit it.
Holy crap.
Now, Nathan vouches for this. Nathan, I asked Nathan this question. He told me the exact same story my mother told me. And it was not making any sounds.
Sheesh.
So, mom, they get scared, obviously. Anybody would.
Absolutely.
I would.
Absolutely.
She tromps it, drives about another quarter of a mile or half a mile to, or no, it's probably a quarter of a mile until mom's driveway. Gets in the driveway, parks the car, opens up the vehicle doors, and they're flying for the house.
Sure.
But in the process of flying in the house, that thing, or whatever that was, just keeps flying on toward the Lick Creek area.
Freaking Lick Creek.
Lick Creek, boys. Hotbed.
Guys, I'm not kidding.
I'm telling you.
And it flew out of sight and didn't make a sound.
Wow.
And to this day, my mom and Nathan will verify that and vouch that that is the exact story. Now, is that a UFO? Obviously it is, because you have no idea what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the definition.
It's unidentified flying object.
Was it something the military has? Who knows? I have no clue. But that happened in around 96. I'm pretty sure it was 96 because I was in college. I wasn't there.
Wow.
You know, and the specifics are crazy. So.
Listen, y'all have heard me on this podcast now for 77 episodes. Like, I've had a Shadow Man experience with Justin. Never had anything else like it.
On Lick Creek.
I had never had a Bigfoot experience. I'm remotely pretty much skeptical on most things. But when it comes to UFOs,
oh, yeah.
There has been too many instances where I have seen things where my 100% skeptical wife has experienced things with me that we have all talked about before. Was that there's something about the Appalachian Mountains where the veil is just a little bit thinner.
I think that's it. For some reason.
I don't know what it is.
For some reason.
And we've talked about whatever it could be.
The veil is just thinner.
The veil is thinner here in the beautiful Appalachian
Mountains. And it's only millimeters thick on Lick Creek.
Yeah, I see it, baby.
Guys, y'all have to understand. Hill folk, listen here. You got to understand. All of these stories that I've shared about my Shadow Man experiences on Lick Creek, Brent's stories that he's telling you about Bigfoot on Lick Creek, these UFO encounters on Lick Creek. We brought Fremont into the mix, but guess what? Guess what?
Empties, far from Lick
guess
Creek.
What empties into Fremont?
Lick Creek.
Hey, Lick Creek is weird. Yeah. And I will say this.
There are weird people living on Lick Creek?
They're super weird people.
And I can vouch for that.
Not very many of them, because there's not very many people in general, but 75% of them are weird. I was one of them. I mean, I'm a weirdo. But it's just, there's just something about it. And even to this day, you know, my dad still lives up there, still lives in the same house. If I'm going across Lick Creek, it's one of these things, and you guys have heard me talk about it before. It's just eerie. I grew up there. That was my tromping grounds, my old stomping grounds for, you know, my entire childhood. But it's just eerie.
It's weird. Like as a general skeptic of things, there's have been things that have happened there that we just simply cannot explain.
Yeah. I think that I don't know how else to put it. It's just, it's a weird place. You get these weird feelings. You know, I used to ride dirt bikes and four wheelers growing up. I would go from dad's house, hit the top of the hill, go out toward middle of the world, all these places
lead into each other.
That all leads into each other. And there's sometimes, even when I was riding, you know, I would ride by myself a lot. Sometimes everything would be totally cool. And I never had any experiences that I know of.
But sometimes things would not be.
But sometimes I would just have this feeling come over me when I'm right, like, you better go faster. You better get home. You better turn around. Like, and why does that happen? I mean, that's a sixth sense, you know, that we all have. You know, we all have this heightened awareness when we sense imminent danger that sometimes we can't even explain where that comes from. It's just a basic instinct. That when there's imminent danger, the hair on the back of your neck stands up, you get cold chills and goosebumps, and you know it's time to go. And, dude, it's happened to me there more than anywhere else in the world.
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable.
Mm.
They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers that they probably will never, ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Amen.
Love it.
Mm, that's a good way to close it. All right, boys. Mike, Brent.
Boy, it's been fantastic. So good to have you all on.
Guys, I've been a fan. I'm telling you, I messaged Lance in December. I was working in my basement listening to Tony Merkel and his podcast, Confessionals. And you guys were on his podcast. I was like, oh, my gosh. So I messaged Lance.
These freaking idiots. What are they doing?
This is unbelievable. So I had to message Lance, find out the podcast, started listening in December. Been listening ever since. Love your show. Thank you so much for letting us join in with the crazies.
Absolutely.
And the weirdos, because I'm one of them too.
Absolutely.
And then Brent and I started coaching track together. Had no clue Brent was a Bigfoot fanatic like I was, you know. And we've hit it off well. Went to the indoor state track meet this year, telling stories.
Seemed like it took us 10 minutes to get there.
Boom. And I'm like, this is awesome.
Weirdos attract weirdos. It just happens. Well, I mean, just look at the way this has worked out here. You know, you guys are all coaching track. My daughter runs track. We're all here. And it was just kind of one of those things, you know, like, I told Lance, I messaged him last night. I was like, Mike and Brent's here. I talk to Mike and Brent literally every time I see them about weird stuff. We're all going to be here together. We're staying at the same place. Let's record an episode.
How
Let's
many
jump
times
in
does
that
happen, right?
I mean, this meant to be. Me and Lance have never sat in person and recorded an episode.
Well, this is an honor.
And we had to drive 5 hours away to Harrisonburg to do it.
Yeah, to see each other.
But no, we appreciate you guys. I mean, it's a lot of people have their reservations about coming on and telling their stories, and I know that's a hurdle that a lot of people have to deal with and handle on their own accord. So we appreciate you guys jumping on here and telling your stories and sharing your experiences, because I guarantee there's going to be somebody of the Hill Folk tribe out there that can relate to some of these stories and that can say, even for a brief instant, oh man, maybe I'm not so crazy. These guys have witnessed, heard the same thing. Takes these stories to make people feel like, you know what, maybe I'm not alone in the world. And that's why we do what we do. So we appreciate you boys. Hill Folk, you know where to find us. You can follow us on all of our socials. Those are listed in the show notes. You can go check us out on YouTube at Appalachian Intelligence. Please keep leaving those 5-star reviews. It helps out the algorithm. It jumps us up toward the top of the list whenever people are on there searching for anything of the weird. Especially if they're looking for weird Appalachia. We're toward the top of the list, and we appreciate you guys for that. Keep sharing the show. That's the only way the show grows, is for you guys to share it. Our circle is only so big. It's actually pretty small most of the time. But it takes you guys sharing the show by word of mouth, on the socials, you know. Text everybody on your contact list right now and say, hey, go listen to these idiots over at Appalachian Intelligence. You're going to hate them. We don't care how they listen. We just hope they listen.
We don't know why you keep listening.
The show sucks,
but we're so glad that you do.
All of our patrons, all those that support us, we appreciate you guys so much. Again, we don't know why you do it, but we definitely appreciate it. Share your stories. Send us anything you want to send us, comments, stories, experiences, at AppalachianIntelligence@gmail.com. I think that's about it.
Love yous mean it.
We love you, Hill Folk. Love you, boys. And until next time, we'll see y'all later.